You trickster. Good morning. I said to Tarisai, you trickster. Because I didn't know she was spying on me, you know, like we were having conversations about different things and then she was using them today in the introduction. Thank you, Pastor Haley, for this opportunity to speak here. I don't take it lightly. Some of you know that one of the things I actually prayed about is an opportunity to minister more to the body of Christ. So I'm really honored to have this chance to speak. And as I was thinking about what to say, as you can imagine, this is a big event. It happens once a year, and there are all types of women. Then a friend of mine said to me, you know what, Maria? You don't have to speak to everyone. This message is for just a select few of people, you know? Like, there's just this message that's just going to go to certain women who God wants to speak to on that day. And that just took away a lot of pressure from me. It also became a very good excuse. So if the message doesn't touch you, you know what that means, right? Anyway, today I'm talking about the health of the heart. And basically, my outline will be on four aspects. And that's what mental health is, because obviously you're expecting me to talk about mental health, right, at some point. And then I'll tackle some questions, like, is God concerned about heart issues? Is he concerned about mental health? And then I'll talk about seeking help. And finally, about being a sister's keeper. Okay? So, my first question, when you look at your body, you just take a scan through your body for a moment. When you think about certain emotions, like when you feel hurt, where in your body do you feel hurt? In the heart. Okay. And where in the body do you feel anger? On the throat. Okay. I'm just getting responses here. Is there anywhere else where you feel anger? Some are doing this, some are doing this, some. Okay. And where do you feel anxiety? In the stomach. Okay, this one you agree, eh? Okay. Where do you feel stress? In the shoulders. Okay, I see shoulders. Head. Okay. All right, so it's interesting that you have all these places where you map out different emotions and things. So I want to answer the question, what is mental health? Okay? And one of the things about mental health is that it's really about brain functions. Okay? The brain and the way it functions. What does the brain do? First of all, this one is pretty obvious, our thoughts. Right? How we think, our perspectives, our opinions, our judgments, that is what the brain does, okay? Then, secondly, our feelings, our emotions, the sadness we may feel sometimes, the joy, the excitement, that is all mapped onto our brain, okay? And finally, our actions, how we act, okay? So, basically, if you think about these three things, how you think, how you feel, and how you act, that is you as a person, right? That is what makes a human being, okay? Basically, your whole being is contained in your brain. So even if you feel hurt here, the hurt is actually here. And if you can't process your hurt in your head, you can't process it here. If you feel anxious, all your emotions are actually mapped onto your brain. And even your actions, you know, for you to even think about turning there, turning your head there, your brain has to communicate to you and tell you there is something worth seeing there before you can turn, okay? If you want to scratch, you have to be able to process in your brain that there is an itch here. And then your hand will be directed to scratch, okay? That is why when someone is very depressed or out of it, and out of it, let me give an example of out of it. When somebody's very drunk, they're basically out of it. Flies can sit and they won't be able to do that. Because you need to process that, okay? Even things like just your posture, how you move, how you walk, is affected by your mental health, okay? That's why, no matter how much you're trying to look like you're alert and sit up, when you're asleep, we can see the, you know, your head, you can't control it, okay? So how you think, how you feel, and how you act, they're all brain functions. And they're all affected whenever your mental health is affected, okay? That's why, also when we talk about what the brain does, it also controls bodily functions, okay? So when we talk about bodily functions, we're talking about things like how you breathe, your digestion, and that's why when you're anxious, you can have diarrhea. When you're very angry, your heart rate goes up, you know. You receive bad news. You've heard of people who've received bad news. Their heart rate went up. They had a stroke. They had a heart attack. Because your brain controls all those things. So when I say that mental health is really who you are, you get my point, right? It's about the person inside this body. It's like this body is enveloping this person. Their values, their opinions, their thoughts, their convictions, everything. Okay? So I thought I should get that out of the way so we can understand that. So, is God concerned about heart issues? We were talking about that yesterday. Pastor Haley talked a lot about that. And one of the verses she referred to that I also referred to here is that the Bible says in Proverbs 4, verse 23, above all else, guard your heart. For everything you do flows from it. Now, based on what we have discussed, your heart is what? Yes, your brain. Because really, there's really no emotions here. The emotions are here, and then they are translated here. Okay? So God is concerned about those things. He's concerned about our heart issues. We know also that emotions are godly, okay? Why do I say that? In Psalm 7 verse 11, it talks about God getting angry, okay? We also see from Zephaniah 3 verse 17, the Bible talks about how he rejoices over us with singing, okay? So that whole rejoicing has emotions. Like sometimes we imagine God as this flat tone, which is just like, not moved by anything, you know. But we can see that, you know, when we are talking about being made in the image of God, our emotions are also part of it, okay? The Holy Spirit has been referred to in Ephesians 4 verse 30 about being grieved, okay? So we know that God can be grieved. We also know that Jesus got angry and whipped some people, right? Matthew 26, verse 38 talks about how Jesus had so much sorrow that his sweat was as thick as drops of blood. Okay? So emotions are not the enemy. Okay? We should know that for sure. And God cares about our emotions so much that when we listen to his mandate, okay, when he first stands in the temple and he says, the Spirit of the Lord is upon me to proclaim liberty to the captives. And he also talks about binding the brokenhearted. That was his mandate as he's talking about what he's going to do on earth, okay? Somehow, we have gotten to just focus on our physical bodies. We have forgotten that even when we think about our heart and what anchors our heart, those things can affect you as a person, how you grow and how you thrive. We also know that emotions can be so overwhelming that they can result in harm. We know what happened to Judas, right? He was so overwhelmed with sorrow that he took his life. Okay? The devil is happy to have a joyless Christian. And one of the things about, somebody said to me once, they said, if the devil can't have your salvation, he will make sure he has the joy of your salvation. A joyless Christian will be quiet, unproductive, they will not testify, they will not thrive, okay? So that's something that's very important. Now, one thing that is bad news, but it's true, is that hurt is guaranteed. Hurt is guaranteed. It's not me who said that. In John 16, verse 33, Jesus himself said, in the world you will have tribulation, okay? But be of good cheer. I have overcome the world. The scriptures also talk about how that we as believers will be sharing in the sufferings of Christ, okay? So whether it's being betrayed, the things that he went through, whether it's being angered, we too will experience that. The devil wants you to believe that what you're going through is just your only, like you're the only one experiencing this. Whatever trouble you're experiencing, that you're the only one. Your situation is unique, you know. And it's so funny, you know, how when you try to share with someone something, you know, like I was once duped in a deal and you're trying to share with them. So, you know, I was duped in a deal and this. And the person is like, me, you know, as if like, no, yours can't be as bad as mine. Like my situation, you know, and they'll try to show you how maybe their situation is even more painful than yours in some way. Okay. So the devil tries to make you believe that when you're going through something, you're the only one. Yes, I lost my aunt, but I'm the only one who lost my aunt in this way. You know, like this one, your aunt, at least she was sick for some time. You knew. Mine was murdered. You know, so there's all these things. And then sometimes you want to go through and you say, you know, at least you were not close to the person, but us, we grew up in the same house, you know. So there's always something that is always trying to tell you that your situation is completely unique. And, of course, in some aspects, it is unique, okay? But the Bible tells us that no temptation has come upon you that is not common to man, okay? So what you're going through, you're not the first. Neither are you the last. And that's why the Bible, even now, is still relevant to us, okay? The Bible also talks about how that Jesus came for those who are sick. Now, this is an important thing for me because as Christians, we find it very important to walk around very put together. Put together, having all the answers, okay? It's even worse if you're a Christian and you're with a non-believer. You have to show them that it's better. Like, how are you going to advertise this faith? So you try to make sure you're put together, okay? But the truth is, none of us are put together. I'm telling you, I know. Because the Bible says, those who are well have no need of a physician. If you are here, you need Jesus. Okay, you need Jesus. You know how people say, hey, that one needs Jesus. Like, you need Jesus. The Bible clearly says that, you know, those who are well have no need of a physician. Okay, so if you're doing fine, you don't need Jesus, okay? But we need Jesus. We need Jesus. We're being transformed constantly into the image of who God is. Yesterday, Teresa was giving an announcement about please take care of your belongings and so on. We're among believers. But when Paul was talking to the Ephesians and said, do not steal, he was talking to believers, okay? So, obviously, we are fractured in some way, okay? One of the things that I've found being in this space is I've had the opportunity to sit and listen to different women who are hurting for different reasons, okay? Sometimes it's about not being able to find love, hurt so many times. I mean, that's why those people who bring lover back kind of have business, you know? Because love is a big deal, you know? Vama love, you know? Yeah. Sometimes it's about betrayal. Betrayal by a sibling, by a friend, in situations that you never thought somebody could betray you in, and so on. Sometimes it's even about partners, okay? And then sometimes we're struggling with childlessness. And one of the hard things about women is because we are so personal, we are, in a way, constantly competing. I don't even know if that's the right word to use. Okay, so when you find men speaking, they will sit and speak about football. Maybe they'll talk about their different teams, but they can speak and sit and talk about football, and that's okay. When you find women, it's, so I find another woman, so I want you, are you married? Okay, okay, do you have kids? Okay, how old are your kids? Okay, so I'm bringing now to comparison. Okay, okay. So your kids are 10 and, okay, which school are your kids at? My kids are at this school and, you know, and then we start talking about schools and programs and whatnot and so on. And so you find that things like childlessness is almost like an identity. And you miss out on something, okay? And some of these things are hard to talk about, okay? Things like being able to talk about miscarriages. Some of us have miscarried a couple of times, and nobody knows about it, okay? Nobody knows. Somehow, you know, with the hospitals, you can have the fetus cremated and no burial. Sometimes it's the families that tell you, don't even tell anybody about it, and so on. So you have all these hurts that you can't publicly speak about, okay? Some have got problems to do with debt, and sometimes it's the borrowing, the constant borrowing that we do, the constant competition of how many shoes, how many handbags, which latest phone. Do you have that fashion? And people share all kinds of things, where you can get lay-by, where you can borrow what, which village banking you can, you know. And then some have these issues to do with debt. So you find that all these things people are going through alone. And isolation is killing us. It's really killing us. One of the saddest times for me is when I sit with a client, and then I'm asking them, so who else knows about this? And they're like, no one. No one. That's the one thing the devil wants to do. Make sure you are going through this alone, and then corner you. And then when they corner you, with the lies now. You are a failure, you are this, you failed to have a man in your life, you failed to keep a man, you failed to hold a pregnancy. Like, you find people are having all this guilt, and you ask them, like, so how did you fail to keep this pregnancy? You understand? Like, these are supposed to be things that are beyond. But even when you are guilty, okay, you are dealing with something. Yes, I shouldn't have been with that non-believer. I shouldn't have gotten pregnant. I shouldn't have whatever. The point is that the devil capitalizes on that isolation and tries to make sure that you alone, hearing only the negative words, you come to ruin. You are a joyless Christian that cannot minister, that cannot prosper. Now, earlier I talked about mental health. And Teresa was talking about, you know, the need in mental health and whatnot. And the truth of the matter is that there is a shortage of mental health services everywhere in the world. Of course, in Zambia more than others, because, you know, we are a third world country. But it is true in every aspect of, you know, the corners of the earth, okay? And the WHO came up with a model which is called the optimal mix of services for mental health. This pyramid talks about how best we can deal with mental health services at the most primary level, okay? So if you notice at the bottom where it's green most, because there's green there, so it's not dark green, but, you know, so green most. It says self-care, okay? So basically, if we can self-care, we will reduce a lot of the mental health problems. On the side there, my right, it says frequency of need. So the most of the people, all they need to do is good self-care. And once they do good self-care, they will be okay, okay? But as we go up, there's also need for basic care, informal care. So not everybody needs a specialized professional care. If problems are dealt with early, okay, you will find that just the informal care is enough for a person. So the majority, so as the pyramid goes up, it talks about how much less of the population needs those services. So the broader aspect of people needs self-care, okay? And then the next group of people just needs really supportive, loving relationships. That's all. And if we can do that, you can see even on the other, on my left, the arrow going down is talking about the cost. The cost of those services, the cost of self-care is the least. The cost of informal care is the next, okay? So I'm bringing this here because sometimes we think that, you know, there's mental health and then there's the church and then there's life somewhere and then they're not really related, okay? I'm bringing here this discussion so we can think about it, okay? So just starting with self-care, one of the common things I like to talk about is the BASES model. And in the BASES model, there are five aspects that you look at. Firstly, the body. Just taking care of your body. Pastor Haley also talked about that yesterday. Basic take care of your body means hydration, good sleep, good nutrition, good exercise. If you are doing those things well, remember that all those, the functioning of the body also draws on your mental energy. So if you are doing those well, you are reserving some of your mental energy required for other aspects of your life, okay? And then there's achieve. So the achievement refers to your sense of being able to contribute meaningfully to society, okay? So whether it's work, whether it's being able to volunteer somewhere, but having a sense of, I did this, I contributed this. Even things like learning, okay, learning a new skill and so on. And then connecting, obviously building meaningful relationships where you thrive, okay? People who refresh you, as opposed to constantly thinking about people who you refresh, okay? So that is important to build your reservoir of mental energy as well, okay? And then looking at things that you can enjoy, whether it's listening to music, having a chat with someone, having a walk in the garden, enjoying nature, all those things affect our mental health. And I want to talk about the last one, which is seeking help. Seeking help can involve a number of things. Seeking help can involve getting a resource that you need. In my book, How Can I Make the Pain Go Away, one of the things I talk about is getting help and what can be involved in that. It's also talking to someone. And I also talk about that in my book in the third chapter, about talking to someone and the process which you can go through just deciding who to talk to and things like that. And finally, getting professional help, because sometimes that's what you need, okay? To get that professional help. So I want to spend a bit more time talking about reaching out. When I was in university, I got into this relationship, which was supposed to work, okay? So I'm saying that because, you know, there's those relationships which you get in for fun, you have a crush, you know. But this one was like, you know, those relationships where you get into a relationship with a believer, and you know, you know what I mean. You even check in with your friends, and you know, you have some testimony here and there. So, you know, you think, you know, this is going to work. And it didn't work, okay? It didn't work. And I was so devastated. I was so heartbroken. I was so depressed. It was hard for me to concentrate in class. I couldn't study. And I remember I was having an exam, and I just couldn't study. And I remember my best friend sitting down and said, oh my gosh, you're going to fail. So this is what we're going to do. We're going to revise. And she sat me down and she got some past papers and she literally started going through the questions with me. Like question one, this is the question. Here are the answers. Blah, 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 blah. And whatnot. And should be, okay, say this back to me. And she literally got me through revision that day before the exam for me to pass. And one of the things that happened is that, you know, how when you're a Christian, like for me by that time, I was not like a wishy-washy Christian who didn't know that, you know, it's not over with God. So I knew, you know, I'm still talking to God. Like I'm angry at you, God, but we're still talking. So I was still going to church and doing all that and going to church, but looking for something that would minister to me, okay? Do you know those times when you go to church and you really want a message that would be relevant to your situation? And then maybe the pastor is talking about evangelism. So I went through that kind of time. Like a number of times I went to church, then there was, you know, evangelism. Another Sunday it was giving or something, like, you know. It just wasn't it. And then I went to church this particular time, and in the middle of the sermon, I said, I've had it. Like, I've come here, I want something, and then, like, there's nothing. So I'm leaving. So I started walking out, you know, and then when I reached the gate, I said, but what am I doing? Again, I go back to my room, my four walls, and cry again and be sad. Like, what is that? I have to find a way of finding help right here. So I got back and I sat for a moment and thought, what am I going to do? Then I decided, okay, I'm going to speak to one of the women in church, okay? So I reached out to one of the elders' wives, you know, in the middle of service because I couldn't wait anymore. And so somehow, someone got her out and we went and sat in her car. And I told her how I was feeling. And I told her how I was hurting. And I told her all these different things. I can't remember what exactly she said. But I remember that I was loved. And I was hugged. And I needed some personalized attention. And I got it. And I needed somebody to listen to me. And I got that. And we continued that journey for a bit more. And I know that this happens to a number of us. That, you know, you tell yourself, I'm looking for some help here, and I'm not getting it. And then we just give up. And we just stop. Okay? I'm thinking about the woman with the issue of blood. Do you remember how long she struggled with that issue? 12 years. 12 years. You, how long have you been struggling with your issue? 12 years. 12 years. And she spent all she had. She spent all she had. She had looked in a lot of places. And then she took a risk. Because at that time, if you have blood issues, you don't come out in public. And she came out in public and decided, I'll just get my help and go. I'll just go, you know, do my thing, and then go. But unfortunately, or fortunately for her, it became a public issue. It was supposed to be a private issue that she's dealing with. It became a public issue. Today we can talk about it because it became a public issue. and we can identify. My point is, yeah, maybe 12 years is a long time to struggle with an issue. But how old are you? And so if you think about it, okay, say you are 60, and then you've been struggling with an issue for 12 years, and then you're going to live, you know, now with all the medicine and whatever, you're going to live another 30 years. Can you imagine? Why would you want to live like that? So, if there is a way you can get help, you need to reach out. You need to fight for yourself, okay? And somehow, I think that sometimes we expect that when we belong to a community, somehow you can tell. And women are good at that. You know how you're in this marriage and then you're upset. And you expect that he'll notice that you're not talking to him. And then he doesn't even notice. He's just busy. You get even more annoyed. But we do that even to other women. Like, look, guys, I pray with them. How can they not know I'm not okay? I haven't been there for 2 weeks. They haven't even noticed I haven't been okay. And then the assumption is that everybody else is okay. We already said those who are well, they don't need a physician. They don't, okay? So this whole thing of sitting and hoping that there's several prophets who can come to you and say, I know exactly what you're going through, sister. This is... Mary had an experience which was really, really challenging. It was supposed to be a blessing, but it became a challenge. Because first of all, you're alone. Who will believe you? I think that at some point, she's even wondering, like, did I dream? Did it really happen? How come nobody else saw the angel? Like, I think she must have gone to neighbors. Did you see anything happen last night? Anything strange? Were the dogs barking more than usual? And then, you know, and then having to sit through and wait until your next period to see if it's coming, to know if it's true, actually, you're pregnant. You know? And then after that, then you tell Joseph, and he's just like, I'm telling you these things, no? I will have nothing to do. Don't even lie for me. Wherever you got pregnant from, I don't know, and whatnot. But eventually, Joseph gets his dream, and they're talking, but they're just the two of them dealing with this issue, okay? Can you imagine how relieving it was to go to Elizabeth, and Elizabeth said, I know. I know what you're going through. I'm also going through something like you. Somewhere within me, something's going on. And she stayed there 3 months. She had somewhere where she could talk with someone and share some of those experiences, not going through those things alone. Hannah's solution came after she opened up to the priest there. She had been distressing for a long time. She had been crying and all these things. But finally, when she went to the temple and she spoke to the priest there, then she was able to receive her answer. Go back. You will conceive. Okay? So we see different women going through stuff, and somehow their breakthrough comes when they get out of their little box and reach out. I'm thinking of the paralytic who was brought in by his friends. Like, this one was so bad that it's his friends that had to bring him. Do you think it was a secret? How can your friends bring you in if they don't know? You'd be alone in the house, paralyzed. Okay? So they were able to reach out and fight for this person. Because sometimes even we don't have enough energy. I was telling you about my friend. Like, I couldn't study. I couldn't. And she just sat me down and said, I'll take you through this. I'll take you through this. Because she saw, you are going to fail. Over Vama love. So she took me through it, literally carried me through that season, okay? But obviously she had to know what's going on. She had to know the extent to which it's affecting me, okay? I wasn't covering up anything. When we think about Jesus as well, When Jesus was at his lowest point, death is imminent. We can see it. It's coming. He went to his disciples. He said, pray with me. Pray with me. Did they pray? What happened? They slept. And then after they slept, he got back and found them sleeping. What did he do? He woke them up and did what? He asked them again. He asked them again. Some of us, I dared to share my heart and you slept. You didn't care. That's it. I've stopped. Believers are not helpful. I shared in a church prayer meeting. I told them. They never prayed. Nobody followed me up. Nothing. I'm done. He still went back, woke them up, and asked them to pray again. Okay? And when he came back, still they were sleeping. And he woke them up. And he told them, the hour is at hand. Like, ain't nothing we can do now. But after resurrection, it was those same disciples he went back to. And upon that rock, the church was built. So still, even when we find that our friends are failing, that's not an excuse to walk alone. When the Bible is talking about walking as a body, okay, that's what we're talking about. There's no one who is self-sufficient. All of us need something from someone else. That is God's plan, that we walk together, that we grow together. So, when do we reach out? I remember a story someone shared with me, one of my single friends. I have single friends. And she was saying she had traveled somewhere in a nameless country. And while she was there, so she wasn't dating and so on, but while she was there, she met this drop-dead gorgeous West African man with an accent, you know. And you know how confident they are. While you're trying to shy away, they already know what they're talking about. And so they had great conversation and whatnot. And, you know, so he was ready to take it to the next level. And she's just like, you know, I'm a believer. But she's alone in that country. You know what I mean, right? Nobody's going to know. Do you know what she did? She called a friend in Zambia and said, guy, this is my situation. Pray with me so that I don't do anything foolish. That accountability will stop you from doing a lot of things. Because when you come back, a person will ask you, you don't want to report that you messed up. You know what I mean? Yeah. So sometimes it's about being overwhelmed, either by sin or temptation. These are some of the situations we can reach out for, okay? And sometimes it's a sickness, a diagnosis. Hard for us. Sometimes it's, you know, I've heard people say, no, but if I say it, then it's come true. I'm hoping that, you know, having listened to Pastor Walker's sermon the last couple of weeks has gotten you to get aligned. No, if I say it, then I'm confessing it, then, you know, you can't even share and you're going through this alone, okay? And sometimes it's your faith that's failing. I can't trust God. I'm struggling. I've been asking for a job for I don't know how long. I got into debt. It was my own fault. But I asked for help, and God is not helping, you know. So it could be failing faith. It could be being overwhelmed by different troubles. I want you to remember that it's harder to reach out if you have not built the relationships that you need to build beforehand. Meaning that you need to start working on the relationship before there's a problem. Then it's easier to now say, I can pick up the phone and do that. But even if you have not done that, it's not too late to reach out. It's not too late to reach out. You can still reach out. I want us to go back to the pyramid that I spoke about earlier. And one of the things I talked about was the informal community care. And it's, you know, so what is this informal community care? It's informal, remember? Okay, so you have some answers. Girls' night out and so on. And my question is, can you be that someone who can be in the informal community care that we're talking about? Can you be that someone who I can talk to if I'm in distress and you will hear me out? Because I'm talking about reaching out for help. And sometimes people are like, but who do I talk to? Where is this help? Okay? But yeah, you're here. You're also in the same world, okay? Also, tomorrow it might be you hurting. But can you be that someone that someone else can reach out to? What does it mean to be a sister's keeper? So in being a sister's keeper, Proverbs 17 verse 17 talks about how a friend loves at all times and a brother is born in adversity. So firstly, there's the aspect of friendship, loving at all times. And then that's when the brother or sister is born in adversity. Jesus himself had friends, by the way, lots of friends. Yeah, 12 of them, to be specific. And he walked with them and shared with them. I think in John 15, it talks about how that I no longer call you servants, but I now call you my friends because I've told you everything that I am about. So being able to truly love, this is something you can pray about if you are struggling. Your heart is a bit, you know, there are those who easily love and then there's others. But God is able to transform our hearts. He can change us, okay? So you can really pray that God works on your heart. And then really listen, really listen. If you can listen well, you'll be a great support to somebody. Listen with compassion, with patience, without judgment, okay? Without anticipating, without thinking about what you have to say after they finish speaking, okay? And without comparison, okay? We talked about, but me, my situation. And sometimes you want to share something with someone and they just hijack the whole session with their problem. And then at the end of the day, you're like, no room for me. I think that also communicates how that a lot of people just need to be listened to. Yeah. So the other thing is keep your mouth shut, shut, shut. Okay? Do not entertain yourself with other people's issues. That is very disrespectful. I mean, I am going through something. I'm sharing. You know what? This is what happened to so-and-so. And then if you want to be a bit more spiritual about it, no, pray for so-and-so. Sister, so-and-so. They're going through a lot. They're going through a lot. And then the person says, what lot? I can't really tell you, but they're a lot, you know? Like these marriages. The Bible says the fruit of the Spirit includes self-control. Please, control yourself. Keep your mouth shut. This is one of the biggest reasons why people do not seek help. You know, I always wonder, like I hear people. I hear people, like almost everyone you talk to, they'll tell you, I don't like sharing because people don't keep confidence. Who are these people? Where are they found? Because it's like there are some other people, and all the people I meet are innocent. They're not the ones who share other people's issues, but there are some people. Where are they found? So yourself, start with yourself. Just, if it's really hard for you, just, okay, please don't tell me. I have an issue. I can just pray for you. We need to be like Christ to others as well. We need to be like Christ. One of my favorite sayings says, broken crayons still color. And one of the things that you see when Jesus was dying on the cross, amidst his biggest pain and excruciation, he was able to say to the other thief on the cross, today you'll be with me in paradise. And sometimes we think we have to be well and completely good before we can help others. And we say, I can't help anyone. I'm in my own pain. Sometimes your healing even comes while you're helping someone through their pain. That's when your healing comes. Okay. So you can't say that, you know. It's important for you to know that God can still use you. Even when you're hurting, even when you're not perfect, God can still use you. You can still minister to someone else. And that's what Jesus did for us. So today I want us to go away with these two things. Firstly, that you must reach out if you have a need. But secondly, that you must be reachable. Okay? You too should be a sister's keeper. I'm going to talk about a number of resources that I would like you to be able to use to reach out, okay? Because this is not going to wait any longer. So firstly, I'm hoping that you have your local church and that you can visit your local church and be able to reach out, okay? I'm also hoping that amidst all the stress, if it's too much, at least you can, you know, there's a lifeline called 116. It's toll-free. I'm not sure if it's toll-free. But you can call it from any network, and you'll be able to access that service. And then if you need professional support, you can also reach out to Renaissance. The contact is available on the screen. If you need a personal resource, you can go through. You can get a copy of the book, How Can I Make the Pain Go Away? But I also want to make sure, because you are here today, that if you have a need right now, you don't wait. You don't wait, okay? That you get your help today, today. So I'm going to ask all of us to stand up right now. And if you have a need, you want to pray about an issue, something you're struggling with, a question, a stress, a pain, I'd like you to come in front here. We're not going to pray from here. We will go, and there will be some people who will be able to sit with you one-on-one to pray through your issue, to talk through your issue, to connect you to some support that you can get. So I'm inviting you to come here. If you need prayer, if you need support, please do not leave today without getting that help. Do not leave today. You're here right now. And for others of us who are on the better end of the pain, are doing better, we're doing well, we're just recovered, I'd like you to make a pledge to be your sister's keeper. I'd like you to pray through, as the praise team will be singing, that you commit to God to be that kind of help and support to someone else. So those of you that need prayer, please come forward. And those of us that need to make the pledge, let's go ahead.